WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into a bad news final this week, as we used to say around here. We are providing purple therapy and shall be doing it all week. Could probably make you feel a little better on Friday at the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with our friends at Window Nation and our friends at Goodwill. I'll be giving away some scratch-offs in the Maryland Lottery and some Raven scratch-offs on Friday at Gunpowder Lodge. Hope to see you on Friday between 2 and 5. It's in the old neighborhood for me, a little North Perry Hall, a little South Kingsville, right there at Gunpowder. Hope we get some nice weather. We're going to be inside, outside. Danny Santoro, my old pal from the soccer world and the bar business. We'll be talking about World Cup. We'll be talking about crab cakes and lobster rolls and new menus and all sorts of good things, all of it brought to you by our friends at Goodwill, where we hope that you get out and get some Halloween shopping done, and our friends at Window Nation, where I am enjoying these spring-like fall days with the windows open. 866-90-NATION. You buy two, you get two free. The folks at Window Nation, I have a shirt on right now. Certified master installer. I'm not. They just gave me the shirt. I'm not really. The only thing I install is offense and defense. Luke Jones is here. He will be in Owings Mills all week for – you know what? Will be a long week, right? I mean, these are really tough weeks when they lose in general. You get your ass kicked. It's bad enough. But when you lose games, you should win. And this has happened 3 out of the last 4 weeks now where they are Ricky Ricardo and explaining themselves about how their star quarterback throws passes off his back foot across the middle of the field that he knows better. Penalties. Not lining up right when you're Ronnie Stanley and you're the highest paid guy on the field. Marcus Peters shoving guys in the end zone and pretending to have interceptions. All of the things that happened at the end of the game have conspired to make these tough times. The one thing I would say about this is the defense and the ball going over heads, that stopped for the time being, right? I mean, I think defensively they played responsibly. At some point, they've had some pass rush. It's disappeared at other points. But defensively, they really feel like they're going to get better in this linebacking core. And having Tyus Bowser, having JPP running around now, having Justin Houston maybe, there's this thought that at some point they're going to show up in New Orleans 2 weeks from now and have a whole contingent of these linebackers and defensive players that they haven't had back in week one and week two.
Well, I mean, they held the Giants to 3.8 yards per play. The Giants scored what? I mean, you look at the halftime score. I mean, the defense playing well. There's not a whole lot to complain about when you give up 7 points in one half of football. But, and this is what we keep coming back to as far as this unflattering complimentary style that the Ravens find themselves playing more often than not now. I mean, you get into the second half and it's choppier and they give up a field goal. They give up a touchdown. They give up a touchdown. You know, and of course the last touchdown was because of the turnover, but you know, it really is frustrating because of what you just said. They haven't, this has not been a repeat of the Miami game, right? Even the Buffalo game was not suddenly the Bills are throwing 70-yard passes and the ball's going over their head and they're completely busting assignments. But it is frustrating from the standpoint of they're still going through these periods of time where they're not making a stop. Or in the case of, you know, look what happened with the Adafe Owe penalty and how pivotal that was on New York's field goal in the third quarter. So, I mean, it's just, it's very much like how we talk about the offense. I mean, there are so many things to like. And as you mentioned, certainly there's a reason for optimism with Tyus Bowser practicing now and David Ajabo practicing now. But on the flip side, you've lost Marcus Williams for an extended period of time. And you still don't love the inside linebacker play, or I don't anyway. You know, you still have concerns there. You mentioned it. The pass rush at times looks more promising. And hey, let's mention Travis Jones, first career NFL start for him, gets a sack on the, you know, right off the bat. That was good to see. Justin Matabike's had a very good season. You know, it's not as though this has been all bad by any stretch of the imagination as we're talking about a 3-3 football team.
There's, by the way, Travis Jones at body type, when he gets in on a quarterback and you see this big 98 land, I was yelling goose while I was looking at Todd Heap in the room. You know, there was a little bit of that going on. You don't see a 98 flop down on a quarterback much. I mean, and that Brandon Williams, no offense, but just it looked
wasn't getting after the quarterback. Yeah,
it
wasn't getting after the quarterback. So that's where you look at it, and there's much to like, but then you go and you look in the second half, and okay, they force a punt on the Giants' first possession, but then field goal, long touchdown drive, and both those drives lasted one was 7 minutes, 41 seconds. The other was nearly 7 minutes. And then on the, after the Lamar interception, you still have a chance to somehow hold them, at least hold them to three, and they couldn't do it. Marcus Peters commits the pass interference. So, there's a lot to like, but at the same time, and I know officially the Giants were 3 of 5 in the red zone. They were really 3 of 4. I mean, the Barkley, that counts, with them sliding and taking a knee inside the red zone, that counts as an 0 for 1. It wasn't, right? I mean, that was situational. So 3 for 4 inside the red zone, and the Giants were 7 of 14 on third down. I mean, those we keep talking about situational football for this team, and it's killing them.
You stop the run, and then you give up a third down play, right? Stopping the run at one point, Barkley, the whole offense was 15 rushes for 44 yards or something, right? Right. Like, stopping the run was something that was just there for them against maybe the best back they're going to see for a little bit, right? I mean, he's excellent at home. They wind up losing the game, so it's no consolation either way. But stopping the run has happened. Having the balls not go over their head on the back end, that's happened pretty well. But when your offense puts you on a short field, that'll make your defense look very good.
Oh, no question, no question. And again, when I say they could have made a stop there, clearly, I mean, it was a 13. They were on the 13 yard line. Let's not make it out to be that that was the one the defense. It wasn't. I'm just saying that they did have an opportunity to, save the day a little bit, in the same way that Lamar Jackson had an opportunity to save the day and, gets stripped of the ball and it's over then. So, I mean, you just look at it and there's plenty. If you want to look for positives, there are plenty of them. There's a lot to like about this team statistically. And, as I said in a previous segment, you average 7 yards a play and you give up 3.8 yards per play. You do the math there. That normally adds up to a pretty convincing victory. But when you're just so bad and shooting yourself in the foot at the worst possible times from a situational standpoint, from a high leverage standpoint, to put it in those terms, that's how you find ways to lose football games. So the defense, they had some of that, no question, but you just said it. I mean, overall, they, third quarter aside, they contained Saquon Barkley for the most part. I mean, they really did. And we were talking a lot about their run defense. I've been talking about the fact that their run defense quietly has been a concern. It hasn't, they haven't given up a ton of yards volume wise, but yards per carry, it had been 5 yards a carry going into Sunday's game. So they improved on that front, but
missed tackles were a part of the earlier in September. And I didn't, I didn't feel like they were missing tackles on the second chances, yards after, first contact, all of that. That wasn't a problem against Saquon Barkley. I mean, they put the lunch pail on to stop him, and they did a pretty good job. And I think they believed deep down that the kid at quarterback couldn't beat him.
Yeah.
Or wouldn't have the receivers to beat him for sure.
Well, and let's face it, they kind of played that way to kind of dare Daniel Jones to beat them. And to his credit, he played well in the second half, and he made some big time throws when he needed to. And he is not someone that I've thought very highly of. Most of the NFL hasn't. He has not been, he's not a guy that's looking to get paid, with a lucrative contract right now. I mean, whatever the Giants ultimately do with him, who knows? But you have to give him credit. And same thing for him against the Packers the week before. Like, it's kind of this rope-a-dope thing, right? They just hang around, they hang around, they hang around, they wait for the opposition to make some mistakes. And certainly the Ravens afforded them that opportunity, and they took advantage then. So that's where it is frustrating, because by and large, the defense played well, but you still look at the drive chart in the second half and it wasn't good enough. So that's why I keep saying, keep talking complimentary football, complimentary football, complimentary football. It's what this team has taken so much pride in playing for a long time. And right now it's kind of the opposite. they're each taking their turns, making the critical mistake, and it's costing them football games. So, it doesn't mean that they can't clean it up, but the longer this goes on, at some point in time, you're kind of looking at this team and saying, what's their identity? And I kind of said it in jest, I think, last week, or maybe it was 2 weeks ago, I suppose. But they've got like an Atlanta Falcons vibe going on right now. Thinking back to the Falcons of a few years back, where they would always be winning games and they'd find ways to lose them. So, I mean, that's who the Ravens are right now. Until they consistently prove otherwise. It was great to beat the Bengals. That was a big win. They're still in first place as a result, and they have the tiebreaker right now. So it's crazy, the terms that we're talking about this football team, but they're in first place in the AFC North. You know, like it or not, they are. That is their reality right now. But you keep looking at this thing, and you know, they got to clean up the mistakes. You know, they're just it's like Ronnie Stanley said in the post game. And I do want to clean something up that you had mentioned. That wasn't Stanley's fault on the illegal formation. Some receiver needs to be covering him up. He was the last man on the line of scrimmage. Like that wasn't his fault. It's whoever, you know, whether it's Lamar not reacting to it, Harbaugh not calling a timeout, or most importantly, whoever was supposed to be lined up over there who wasn't. And I haven't gotten clarity on that at this point, but you know, the point is he made the comment, we're going to watch the tape and we're going to realize we're going to see we're once again, our own worst enemy. And he's spot on there. I mean, it really is. I saw the meme that some people were posting on Twitter late Sunday night that the Ravens' toughest opponent the rest of the year, and it had a colon, and then it had a picture of the Ravens logo. I mean, it really is about, at this point, stop beating yourselves, because you are more than good enough to be let's say at least a 5-1 football team right now, and you're 3-3, and you have no one to blame but yourself ultimately, because you're just not making plays when it matters most.
He's Luke Jones. He is going to be out in Owings Mills all week. Hey, man, I got to give you a chance to at least have a little bit of oxygen on this, because we didn't talk about this much last week either. Wink Martindale, before he gets out of the rearview mirror for us and over into the NFC, and we don't worry about him anymore and all that. I always got along with Wink because he and I went drinking together in Indianapolis at the Combine 15 years ago with Rex Ryan and Marvin Lewis back when he was coaching the Raiders and like all that. So he always made time for me whenever, and I never asked him for anything the whole time he was here, but he's in my phone and I could say hello, whatever. Where are you on the Wink thing? Like, I guess the requiem on all that is, why is he not here anymore? People have asked me that, and I'm like, well, I think to some degree, and this is certainly the case with me, and I don't know that I'll ever have a conversation with John Harbaugh again, quite frankly, given my angst in regard to his integrity or lack thereof. And I was giving out books and thinking, I wrote a book about your integrity, dude. This isn't going well with me being locked out. But all that being said, with Harbaugh and Wink, Harbaugh sort of wears out his welcome, right? Like a little bit of John goes a long way. A couple, 3, 4, 5 years, he's in charge, you're not. I don't know where that personality thing happened. But the notion that they didn't want Wink anymore, or Wink didn't want them, or the players, or whatever, it's an awkward circumstance, I think, to some degree. It's one thing to leave and go become a head coach somewhere else. It's another thing to get tapped on the shoulder when you've done a great job and say, nah, I'm going to change things up. To me, that's very Harbaugh. And that's probably part of his managing with the hair on fire a little bit. Everybody's got to be pissed off. Everybody's got to be on edge. There's a part of that with John that plays into that Belichick thing, that a little bit of that may go a long way. And I think in the case of Don Martindale, Wink, the feeling was a little bit of lack of respect. It felt like, and he gets the last laugh winning the game, but you thought very highly of Wink. I thought highly of Wink. A lot of people thought highly of Wink. I'm wondering when that changed with John.
Yeah, well, I think, and you know, we talked about this back in January and February, but you know, just the quick thumbnail was, keep in mind, this wasn't a move that was made 2 days after the season ended. This was, I believe it was the end of, I want to say it was the second Friday after the season had ended. I know from talking to people within the organization that there was an expectation several days after the season that all of the coordinators were returning. And, you know, it's, I don't think that was something where John just woke up the next day and changed his mind. That's where I do wonder, you know, was this the brain trust? Was this ownership and Eric DaCosta and John Harbaugh, you know, kind of scrimmaging this a little bit in that regard? I do think there was.
See, I would say, John would say, I don't scrimmage my coaches. I pick my coaches. That's part of my contract.
Well, but the Ravens,
like, that's who, but that's what, right, John would say publicly. And I think that's what John would say over a beer, is that I'm in charge of my coaches. Wink's not here. That's my decision. That's, you know, and I don't know where that got crazy.
Well, but the Ravens have always been collaborative, though. Let's, you know, I hear what you're saying, and I'm not disputing that it wouldn't be that way.
They weren't collaborative when I got thrown out of the media. That was all right. So they're what they say and what they do is it wasn't collaborative when Harbaugh and DeCosta are sending me text apologizing for throwing me out like they don't have a part in it. So I have a hard time believing that even Steve would come to John and say, I need a new coordinator. Like, I think John would say, I need a new owner then. You know, I mean, based on 15 years of this with John, I would think John would be very, very bristly at it. Maybe he would take a conversation, but this to me feels like John versus Wink and something weird and something ego and something maybe even money and something even, well, if you feel that way about me, I'll just go fresh start. In the same way that if Bisciotti was calling Harbaugh and saying, you know, I want the backup center playing, John would, I think, I mean, from being around John would say, I respect Steve, but he's not going to tell me how to coach the team. And if that's the case, I'll go coach the Packers or some other team, you know?
Well, and let me be clear. I'm not suggesting there was a mandate. And I don't know that for certain, even if that would be what played out. But I think there were conversations. You know, they scrimmage and have conversations about what, you know, where they're going. You know, I do think it's possible there could have been a contractual factor there. I mean, assistant coaches, we don't talk about assistant coaching contracts. We talk about the head coach and how long he's under contract. But, you know, you have these guys that are, you know, that don't want to be lame ducks, right? They don't want to be going into a situation where they're in the last year of their deal and the team holds all the cards. I think in the case of Wink, knowing that he was someone who was interviewing for head coaching jobs back in 2019, late, you know, back in January of 2020, same with Greg Roman. You do wonder if there was a little bit of, you know, on his part, maybe a change of scenery might be good for him to kind of change up his resume a little bit. You know, if he can go somewhere else and help turn around another team, might elevate his star a little bit. So I think elements of this, there was some mutual to a degree, certain parts of this. I think there was some mutual decisions where you just say, all right, maybe it's time. On the flip side, I do think the Ravens, and now this gets more into the schematical part of this, I do think there was a desire for the organization, you know, meaning football ops, you know, front office, analytics, coaching staff, go down the line of maybe pivoting a little bit from this very aggressive high ceiling but low floor. And we saw this on a number of occasions when you rush cover, you go cover zero and all out blitz. If it doesn't get there, guess what happens? The ball gets thrown over your head and you give up a touchdown.
Well, when it's Joe Burrow, it does, right?
Sure. But I think philosophically, there was maybe a thought of maybe we need to go in a direction of, you know, a little more of the bend, but don't break. Not entirely, but maybe philosophically. And we're seeing this around the league. We've talked about it a lot this year. Ravens and lots of teams. Joe Burrow, this has been a big thing with him. Cover two and two high safety shells and things of that. You're seeing teams really start to do that. And that's why we're seeing the running game start to become more of a factor around the league again, because teams are playing so much cover two. Great way to bust cover two is run the football because you're going up against lighter boxes. So I think there was a little bit of everything that went into that. And look, John Harbaugh and Wink Martindale talked for several minutes on the field. You know, this wasn't like a quick handshake and, you know, how you doing, how the kids, and then they moved on. They talked for several minutes, and yeah, there was a camera there. So I'm not saying that there wasn't some, you know, some aesthetics there, you know, as far as wanting to make it look good. But I've never gotten a sense.
It's all performative with the cameras on, isn't it?
It is. It is.
With Ravens.com and like, it's one giant Hard Knocks that never ends, and the cameras never. I mean, Marlon Humphrey, I mean.
Well, let me finish my thought. We'll get to Marlon in a second.
I'm just saying all of that, when the cameras are on, you're like, well, they were friendly out there. Well, they kind of have to be.
But my point is, well, but I can also tell you times I've seen in coaches or former teammates, whatever, where they come up and say hello, but you can tell it's not the warmest reception. I've never gotten the sense that Wink hates the Ravens or hates John now. Never gotten the sense that the Ravens hate Wink or John hates Wink. I think it was some of those factors that I just mentioned, and they just, all right, it's time to move on, you know? And I don't think it was 50-50 perfectly mutual. It never is. Just like when a guy and a girl breaks up, it's never truly mutual. It's always one or the other, you know, kind of being the catalyst, at least to some degree. But I do think it's a case where, from Wink's perspective, I think there was a case of, you know what, fresh start might not be the worst thing for me. And I can go somewhere else. And if I can coordinate a defense in a place like New York, and the Giants have been bad for a long time, and if I can help turn them around, and I think this Brian Daboll cat's a pretty good coach, then maybe I'll be in a better position to still have a chance to get a head coaching gig in the next year.
These guys are vagabonds to begin with, right? Yeah. I mean, they know going into this, you know, Wink's been a dozen places. That's just what it is. The unusual part is when John Harbaugh hangs around for 15 years, or Mike Tomlin, or Sean Payton, or Bill Belichick hang around for 15 years.
Yeah. So, and again, the timing of it, he was let go. It was, I want to say it was 11 or 12 days after the season ended. That was the part to me that said, okay, I wonder if this was, you know, the brain trust talking about this, and then John comes to a decision, or John lays it out there for Wink, and Wink's, you know, I think there were mutual elements to it, but certainly I think the Ravens were in a position where they thought, hey, maybe this is the right time to bring in Mike McDonald, who's familiar with us. Kid went to Michigan last year, did a great job with the Wolverines defense, plays a little more cover two, a little more too high safety. Maybe we get away from the crazy hair on fire blitzing that leads to some big plays. Maybe, you know, and it's not as though the Ravens don't do that. You know, they had some blitzing opportunities, you know, big time in Sunday's game. But,
well, on the coaching track as well, he's got a coordinator for 4 or 5 years that isn't looking for another gig.
Yeah. Sure. No question. Although I would also say if Mike McDonald, you know, not right now necessarily, but if this defense finishes in a very high position, he might get a head coaching gig.
Yeah, it doesn't take the Nick Sirianni's and the Dables long to get gigs once they get into that seat and do well, right? Perform well.
But, you know, just to put a bow on the Wink thing, I would venture to guess that the couple cold ones that he enjoyed late Sunday night were very cold and very, you know, tasted good for Wink Martindale. So, numerous players and coaches, and this was before there were cameras when John and Wink were talking, but numerous players and coaches and staff members from the Ravens an hour and a half before the game, when, as you know, it's, you know, they're not into their full blown full team warm up, but lots of guys are out on the field stretching out, working out, whatever. So many of them went out of their way to go over to Wink, give him a hug, talk to him. I mean, well-liked individual, someone who was a good soldier here for a long time. Keep in mind, he arrived in 2012. He was their linebackers coach for a long time before he got the DC gig. So, you know, this is someone who was here for a decade, and, you know, the decision was made for that they were going to move on, and he's landed in a good spot. Hey, he's part of a coaching staff of a 5-1 football team right now. So I think he would tell you his defense still needs to be better. You know, I mean, they gave up 7 yards of play. You know, you can't count on the Ravens to self-destruct every week, you know, to help out your defense, but certainly he's in a good position, and, you know, maybe these teams will meet again at some point, you know, certainly in different conferences, you don't assume that anytime soon, but he certainly got the last laugh on Sunday. That's for sure.
Luke Jones is here. He will be there in Owings Mills. He is Baltimore Luke, of course, out on the interwebs. And I'm going to be up at Gunpowder Lodge doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery with our friends at Window Nation and Goodwill on Friday from 2 until 5. And between now and then, Luke will be on the backfields out in Owings Mills, where he is allowed to take pictures from a long distance and watch practice for very short periods of time and provide injury reports and updates on the WNST tech service provided by Coons Florida Security Boulevard. All right, like, let's put football in a box for a minute. There is this other thing going on called baseball that you love, that I have, that has reinvigorated me here this week, watching 3 and 4 games a day and taking breaks for 18 inning games and waiting out rain delays with the Yankees and the Guardians. I'm even saying Guardians and not tribe or Indians anymore. Padres, Phillies, this is, and the Astros, you get the hate on them, and like, this is a pretty good week for baseball, and you'll be up late. And I think the part of this that for me that's interesting is watching our fan base, the Baltimore Orioles fan base, think there's going to be there's going to be another Delmon Young moment here. There's going to be that moment that these Phillies fans are having and peeing on these Braves fans and these Padres fans, giving the Dodgers fans the finger and, you know, the Friars out. It's fun. And that environment is so baseball October And the rest of the season, you're out there every night, dude. It's sleepy. It's quiet. There's rain delays. There's nobody there some nights. Some nights you get a little excitement. You give a bobblehead away and some people show up. But this notion that that stadium in San Diego that I've been in a dozen times, including for the Rolling Stones, would be that electric at 2 o'clock in the morning. Only baseball can do that. It's got its own heartbeat. And if you've ever loved baseball and you've watched in the last week, you can fall back into it a little bit, especially now to get rid of the shift.
Right, right. Pitch clock. That's the one I'm way more excited about. But I mean, just how about the fact you mentioned through the lens of looking at it as an Orioles fan and thinking of envisioning next year, year after that, you know, hopefully 5 years from now, and you know, that they sustain something and that it's something that can be memorable and they got a chance to.
Well, it's hard not to think of the Orioles when Manny Machado's running around, well, right? And Adam Jones is hugging him afterward. And all
it's that, but let's also point out that the two teams in the NLCS, 89 wins, 87 wins. And the team that won 111, the LA Dodgers, are at home. The teams that won 101 games, the Braves and the Mets, are at home. And it's really a reminder of, it's not so much that the Dodgers had this fatal flaw. It's a reminder of, to your point, playoff baseball is just that different. When you are talking about 3-game series now in the wild card round and 5-game series in the division round, that, I mean, that's a best of five does not truly tell you which team is better. It tells you which team is playing better at the moment. And the Padres are playing better than the Dodgers over a 4-game series, you know, 4 games. The Phillies were better than the Braves over 4 games. And that's what's exciting in the terms of, it's not as though the Orioles need to take this massive jump to win 103 games next year. Although that would certainly be great, right? I mean, that'd be fun and make for a great regular season, but it's a reminder of get in, right? You get in and you have a chance, especially if you're a team that like the Padres, who, you know, say what you want about Manny Machado. I mean, you know, they haven't even had Tatis, which is amazing about this, right? One of their two best players has not been involved in this at all, but they've got some, you know, I don't want to say lesser players, but off the radar kind of players playing really well and red hot right now. And in the case of the Phillies, you know, they have some guys in their lineup that finally started hitting, and, you know, they've got a pretty deep lineup when you have someone like Gene Segura hitting eighth, but they've got Wheeler and Aaron Nola. You know, you have a 1-2 punch like that. And that wasn't as critical in the Braves series, but that was huge in the St. Louis series. You know, that 1-2 punch, and it was all over before the Cardinals could even get started. So it really is, you know, it's fun. It's a lot of fun. And it's a reminder that in baseball, more than any other sport, when you continue to extend out the postseason, and that's where I do have some conflicted feelings, because you have this 162 game marathon and you have these teams that win well over 100 games, like the Dodgers. I mean, 111 wins, that's crazy. And they're done, right? And you know, the LA media and mainstream media, oh, what was wrong with the Dodgers? This team was flawed. It's not really any of that. It was a 5-game series and the Padres are better than them for a very short period of time. If they played an 11-game series, a 13-game series, something like that, Dodgers would win, I think. I'm pretty confident.
They won every other series with the Padres over the last 15 years.
Well, I mean, look at this year, Nestor. I'm looking at it right now. I just pulled up the Padres schedule. They were 5-14 against the Dodgers. 5-14. They scored 47 runs and they gave up 109. You cannot tell me that the Padres were this superior, you know, fundamentally superior roster that was built or something like that. No, it was just this snapshot in time. They were better than the Dodgers over the last 4 games and they beat them. And hey, I'm not saying that they should apologize for that. It's just a recognition of postseason baseball as it expands. And we're now to 3 wild cards, 6 teams in each league. It is such a separation. It's such a departure from what regular season baseball is. And that's where I kind of struggle from the standpoint of, you don't want to continue to devalue your 162 game inventory, but boy, it does make for some fun moments in October. And as much as I just, you know, lament maybe talking about 162 not being quite as meaningful, it doesn't make October any less enjoyable. And to see what to see what the Padres did against the Dodgers, to see what the Phillies did against the Braves, and a series now where, you know, one of those two teams is going to be playing in the World Series. I mean, who would have guessed that? I mean, the Padres finishing so far behind, the Phillies fired Joe Girardi in early June. I mean, they were as mediocre to bad as the Orioles were over the first couple months. And, you know, both teams kind of turned it on at that point. Phillies to a little more, you know, to a greater degree, but you know, it's been fun. And you know, you mentioned it, 18 inning marathons. I mean, we had a 15 inning marathon in the wild card round. I mean, and I know some people complain and say, well, that's a long time to sit there and have no runs be scored, but boy, it's some drama. It's fun.
My wife sat there and watched all 17 innings and then fell asleep as the run scored.
Woke up, it was that, 1-0. That's funny you mentioned that, because the Rays Guardians game in the wild card round, I had been watching that. I missed the go. I missed it, you know, in the 15th. I missed the game winning.
It's five and a half hours of baseball. It's a little, right. You know, like, well, the fact that I woke up in the seventh inning and the Padres created a miracle at 12:42 in the morning, and I'm at 2:30 in the morning watching Adam Jones drink champagne. It was a little weird. That's all.
Well, you just said it. I mean, at some point in time, you have to sleep. At some point in time, you have to go to the bathroom.
I couldn't go to bed after the Padres were winning. I was so like into it and watching these people celebrate and having been there, and my cousin's a Padre fan and stuff. And I'm thinking, they never get to have this much fun. And I was there in 98 and I'm like, well, I had a good time in 98. Then I looked at Trevor Hoffman. I'm like, damn, he looks 24 years older. And I'm thinking to myself, I pulled the pictures out and I'm thinking Hell's Bells and coming in and the Yankees and Mariano Rivera. I mean, I remember that like it was yesterday. It was 24 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, they were swept. I mean, I think back to, you know, feeling so good for Tony Gwynn, you know, to be on that stage, and but it didn't go well for them. And
dude, I was at Yankee Stadium, and the press box in the old Yankee Stadium was the auxiliary, so it was down the left field line, kind of up high. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget Gwynn hitting that home run in game one.
It was a bomb, right?
It hit a Bud Light sign, and it clanked out in right field, and it was just this bang. And you could have heard he rounded the bases, and I remember around the base, you could have heard a pin drop. You could have heard a rat piss on cotton at Yankee Stadium that day. Luke Jones is here. He'll be watching baseball and getting ready for football here this week. The Ravens taking on the Cleveland Browns. He is Baltimore Luke. He will be out in Owings Mills. We will be around here. The WNST tech service provided by Coons Ford is available as well. And, you know, on behalf of Justin Tucker, to make him feel better about missing that kick, to get some Rofo chicken here this week, fill up, make sure you're using your points and all that good stuff. All of our sponsors alive and well as we get into the true fall around here and some fall baseball. Got a World Series coming around the corner here, as well as some good football, two football games this week. Ravens on Sunday, then the Ravens next Thursday against Tom Brady and the GOAT down in Tampa. I am Nestor. We are WNSD, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. Hoping to see you on Friday at Gunpowder Lodge as we do the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery, Goodwill, and Window Nation. That's 2 until 5 on Friday. We are AM 1570, WNSD, Towson, Baltimore. Back for more on Baltimore Positive right after this.